All right, let's try this again. StreamYard's giving me some attitude, so hopefully this stream goes over relatively well. Hopefully everybody is doing all right out there. Hopefully you're enjoying the cooler weather. And for those watching, you may notice that I'm missing a little bit of hair up top. I've decided to start going to pick my head every single Sunday night, which I've actually grown quite fond of. So today I thought I would discuss Agenda 47. So for those who don't know or are out of the loop or don't pay attention to politics, this is Trump's platform, what I think of it. And I'm going to do my best to give a positive spin to the Trump campaign. I want to apologize for being a few minutes late. StreamYard was just not cooperating with me. I had to launch it on Firefox, and then Firefox crashed, and then I had to come back over to Google Chrome, and now we're here, we're good. Hopefully the stream runs fine. So anyways, Agenda 47, what's this about? Do I agree with these campaign promises? Do I think he's going to pull through on them? And you know, what's going on here with the Trump campaign? I've been a very, very outspoken critic of Trump. I was very pro Trump early on, but, you know, we'll cover that later on in the show. So, of course, as usual, make sure you hit all the links below, tigerfitness.com, through the link below to let everybody, or to let, the guys at Tiger Fitness know that I sent you and help the show out. Go to foxandsonscoffee.com, use code Kyle at checkout, and hit the link for Deemed Fit below to get yourself a little discount and let them know that the Matovic family sent you. And if the code doesn't auto-populate, put Sarah, S-A-R-A-H-M, Matovic, Sarah Matovic, at checkout. And let them know we sent you. So without further ado, let's get right into it, guys.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
All right. And one more time, welcome back, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. You could be anywhere on your wonderful Wednesday night. And if you're in the wonderful state of Pennsylvania, as I am, it's pretty cool. In fact, I've been walking with a hoodie the last 2 mornings. That's how cool it's been. And I kind of like it. Anybody who knows me knows that I'm like destined to move to Florida one day. Destined. You know, funny enough, there's a place called Destin down in Florida. But I swear I'm going to do that one day. I don't know if that's not today. It's not tomorrow, but eventually. I am a, you know, Florida man in spirit. But the heat, when it comes to the working in the automotive field as I do, it's pretty tough, man. It is really hard to go there and work on cars in the brutal humidity when it's 100 degrees out and just sweat your ass off, especially in my shop where we have like little to no airflow. We all have like fans rigged up to get some airflow going. So, yeah, it's pretty brutal. So the cooler weather is much, much appreciated. Yeah, my dad, I'm not sure if I'm used to that or not. You know what? I got used to it pretty quick, and I got to tell you, I'm digging it. My wife on Sunday mornings, right before I usually get home from the gym, I'm like, hey, you know what? We got to do this. So buzz my head and then take a razor to it. And I do that every single Sunday. I got to get myself one of those head shavers. Those things look really nice. I'm looking at a few on Amazon. I see a bunch with good reviews, but I'm going to go for it. Kevin, I'm guessing that's referring to the bald head, but yeah, I'm totally about it, man. And I'm totally good with being bald now. I was too much of a pussy to do it before. I was holding on to what little I had left, but at this point, fuck it, man. Let's go. I read this as Agent 47. Figs, I feel like it's been a while since you dropped by, but I'm glad to see you. I read this as Agent 47 because I saw your bald ass. hopefully I look like a little bit more of like a jacked Mr. or a jacked and, you know, maybe bearded Mr. Clean. Not that. What are you referring to? I'm guessing the show today. I don't know. We'll figure it out. But yeah, so I told my wife to let me know when it's time. Oh, I get it. Yeah. A StreamYard was being a pain in the ass for me. I don't know what it was. I tried to go live like five times on Google Chrome and it just was kicking my ass. Kept saying, no, you know, retry, close out of the ball or out of the browser and then go back in. And God, it was, it was very frustrating, but I went on Firefox. And then literally as soon as I started the show, it shut me out of it. So I came over to Chrome and thankfully here we are. Jen, thank you so much. I like the bald head. Yeah, you know what? I'm digging it too. And my wife said that I look super old. She said if I have a long beard and a bald head, then I look like I'm like in my 40s. But she said now I just look like I'm 38 because I have a beard and a bald head. But you guys didn't come here to listen to me talk about my bald head for the entire show. We're already about 5 minutes in. But as usual, I like to chat it up with you guys while we're doing the show. Let me know if you could hear that stack. I'm getting a little something for my soundboard. And if I got to do something to fix that, I'll do my best to fix that. But turn that off. I was very supportive of Trump at first, but it was actually Ben Shapiro and Tommy Sotomayor, which were a very, very unlikely combination if you know the history of those guys. So for people who may not know Ben Shapiro off the top of their head or Tommy Sotomayor off the top of their head. Ben Shapiro, it runs the Daily Wire, who is, you know, kind of like your traditional neoconservative Jewish Republican. He is a very, very big Zionist, very, very, I'd say Jewish, but I know people are going to freak out about that, but he's just very, very tied to the state of Israel. And he's had quotes such as like the greatest thing about America is the fact that we back Israel. And then Tommy Sotomayor, who is a black guy, a black conservative who used to make fun of black women on YouTube and he got thrown off so many times. He is absolutely hysterical. Really, really like him. And when he came out against Trump's banning the bump stocks and everybody started dropping the hard R on him, it was kind of funny. And I began to raise my eyebrows at that. I'm like, well, what the fuck's going on here? And I remember Ben Shapiro pointing out all the spending that was going on under Trump. And this is back before I really got my feet wet politically. So this was probably like, I would say probably 15 to maybe even 2018. I was pretty pro-Trump. I liked the way that the economy was going, so to speak, or at least what little I knew of economics. And we'll kind of cover this a little bit later on. But I really liked the way the country was going because it seemed like things were getting better. My energy bill went down. So I'm like, oh, well, this got to be good. And everybody's telling me that the economy is doing really, really well. So therefore, Trump must be good because he got elected and now things are good. This is generally the kind of logic that people apply when they're talking about politics and presidents. Like right now, everything is pretty rough. I mean, inflation is awful. All the wars going on. The border situation, all this stuff, and it's under Biden. So therefore, Biden's in, all the shit's going on, Biden bad. And these are reasonable conclusions to make for people who don't really dig into data or the information surrounding elections, stuff like that. It's a lot to dig into, but I understand why people just through a cursory glance will kind of be like, oh, well, you know, things are better under Trump, which is understandable and it is true. But where people kind of lose the plot is when they don't look at things holistically. So when we go back to Trump's first term and before he got elected, he was saying a lot of good things on the campaign trail where he was basically saying, okay, well, you know, the economy is a bubble, held up by artificially low interest rates. The unemployment rate is much higher than the 10% or whatever it was back in 2015 than what they're telling you. You got to look at like the Q6 number and then the workforce participation rate. Trump pointed out all these things, much to his credit, on the 2015 campaign. And like in hindsight, I probably would have voted Trump had I been as politically savvy as I am now back in 2016 versus voting for Gary Johnson, which is why I did. And then obviously in 2020, I voted for Joe Jorgensen. And full disclosure, this year I will not be voting unless I feel that Trump is going to follow through on any promises or there's some dramatic change in events, which I don't think there's going to be. There's been a lot going on recently, but like nothing that really makes me change my position or evaluate the political landscape differently. And I understand people's support for Trump, even libertarians, or which would be the majority of my audience. But to kind of get to the point there, I don't see myself voting this year. RFK is, I disagree with him on a lot. I almost thought about voting for RFK, but then when the whole Israel stuff kind of played out, I was like, okay, well, I can't support him now because he's too much of a Zionist. Trump, in there's been circulating news about how supposedly RFK is going to drop out and endorse Trump to get a spot in his cabinet, where I think him and his VP were both thinking about doing the same thing for the Kamala Harris, White House. But I mean, obviously they're not open to that because he's too far removed from them on many, many positions, not the Israel one, conveniently enough, but regardless, I don't think that they would tolerate somebody who's so far off the, you know, left-wing establishment plantation like an RFK to allow him to get anywhere near the White House. Whereas Trump, I think Trump kind of realizes that RFK is kind of outside of this, let's say, the left-wing establishment enough to be welcomed in there, because the general bonehead logic of most people is that, well, you know, if somebody is rejected by the Democrats, then that must mean that we should endorse this person and we should adopt this person, which it's a useful heuristic to kind of look at who the worst people in your government are revolting to and wanting to run to them, but it's not perfect. I'm thinking of the saying where people say, all graphs are wrong, but some are useful. That's kind of where this is. Like, that heuristic is not necessarily wrong, but it's useful. So, and this is kind of the logic that follows when people say, okay, well, all the Democrats hate Trump, so therefore we're going to vote for Trump because he's the person that they can't stand. But if you look after his first administration, I mean, you realize that, like, a lot of the Democratic donors and, like, a lot of the worst fucking companies and, you know, NGOs out there had record high fundraising levels because of Trump. So this is kind of where I get into the little conspiracy of that Trump actually serves a deep state, because he serves to embolden the worst people in our government and NGOs and, you know, different activist groups. But then he also kind of gets his base to accept progressive victories, where, like, you look at Amber Rose speaking at the RNC, which is like, dude, what are we doing? If this is supposed to be like the Republican Conservative Party, then why do we have somebody that was celebrating the Church of Satan and talking about how great abortion was literally like 3 or 4 months beforehand? Why are they getting a primetime speaking slot at the RNC? Now, if you don't want to be the party of conservatism and, you know, American values, whatever that means to you, then okay. But if you're touting yourself as that and as the common sense party, then I think somebody that's celebrating abortions and celebrating the Church of Satan, I don't think that's your route. So those are just some thoughts on kind of like where Trump is and where, like, sort of the Republican Party is as a whole right now in 2024. And to highlight the point again, because I think it bears repeating, I really do think that Trump is the new Republican establishment, which is a good thing and a bad thing, where, you know, kind of like the forever wars in the Middle East aren't really, like, politically viable. Like, if you're campaigning on that kind of stuff, it does seem like a lot of people have kind of turned the other cheek on that. But at the same time, a lot of these wars are still going on, but now we just don't pay attention to it. Like, they're not necessarily surging, which Trump did send more troops to all the Middle Eastern wars. And he did pull some out as well. But, you know, there's no real appetite for something like that. But now, you know, there is basically a large appetite to end the war in Ukraine, because we're seeing a lot of money going over there. I think it's like $200 billion that have been sent to Ukraine. And then, you know, lots of money sent to Israel as well. And it seems like, at least in the people that I've interacted with, my dad, my bass player, and a lot of people who consider themselves amongst the, you know, Make America Great Again, Trump supporting base, they're not really for funding Israel as much. I'm sure there's probably a lot who are, probably like the older people who are much more, you know, like religiously Zionist or just really like Israel. Probably a lot of them are still in favor of funding Israel, but not in favor of funding Ukraine. And like a lot of the, you know, MAGA Congress people and a lot of the MAGA people in the Senate are for funding Israel or for funding Israel. Like even J.D. Vance, before he got picked for VP, he was saying that because the Democrats are holding up funding to Israel, then, you know, they basically, there was a stalemate between the Republicans and the Democrats, because Democrats wanted to send money to Ukraine. And the vast majority of Republicans, lest we not forget, wanted to send money to Ukraine as well. But the Democrats overwhelmingly support funding Ukraine. So in the most recent aid package, let's not forget, was passed, you know, in large part due to Trump. So I think I've rambled enough. Maybe we should actually kind of get into Agenda 47 here. So I actually got it pulled up off of the website. You can go to, let me make sure I got this website right, donaldjtrump.com/platform. So under Agenda 47, This is Trump's plan for when he gets back into the White House, if he gets back into the White House, which I'm not quite as certain that he's going to as much as I was a few months ago. But you know, everybody was saying that he was tied to this Agenda 2025, which I'm going to be honest, I didn't really read. I took a cursory look over some of it. And a lot of the people who kind of align with me, like culturally, seem to really, really like Agenda 2025. But, you know, obviously Trump had distanced himself from that. And he's distanced himself from a lot of like the more extreme right wing guys, which I think is a total travesty. So let's kind of read through these. There's 20 points. And I actually agree with some of them. And yeah, we'll just kind of discuss it here. So read the official 2024 Republican Party platform here. President Trump's 20 core promises to make America great again. All right, so let's start with number one, seal the border and stop the migrant invasion. I'm actually for building a border wall, although I do believe it is a Band-Aid on a bullet hole. We do have a lot of immigrants coming into the country, and we don't know what that kind of looks like when you have unfettered immigration into a country, specifically with people who don't necessarily share a lot of the same values and who don't have blood and soil here to kind of give them a prosperous vision for this country. Instead, they kind of come here and want to forge their own vision for this country, which, you know, I'm not saying that none of them have the similar goals as us, but, you know, there are a lot of people coming from the third world here who don't understand kind of what the values and what the country was really built upon. And that's, you know, an honest day's work for an honest day's pay and a lot of stuff like that. Hopefully that stack isn't coming through to anybody else, but, yeah, so when you have this many people coming in, the other thing is that they can also support policies and grow congressional districts by giving them more seats and different votes to influence people in a certain way. And the other thing that I haven't heard a lot of Republicans talk about that I heard Kim Iverson talk about is a lot of these people will come to the country and then advocate on behalf of overthrowing the country they came from. So like when you think about Chinese people coming here to overthrow the Chinese government, Mexicans coming here to want to overthrow the Mexican government, and then you know, probably the biggest one and the more recent one that Anya Parampil come on to talk about, but Venezuelan migrants, where we've just brutally sanctioned the Venezuelan economy and the Venezuelan government and really made the quality of life so bad for Venezuelans that they come here and then they, you know, basically argue on behalf of Venezuela to overthrow Venezuela. So am I in favor of a border wall and less immigration? Yes, absolutely. But the problem is, if you do not address foreign policy, this issue will not get fixed. You have to eliminate the incentive for people to come here. And there are two incentives, right? First is that they can get largely, public benefits and access public resources that are good, that taxpayers pay into, and those people are not taxpayers and they're receiving those benefits without paying taxes. Now this isn't perfectly libertarian, but to be honest, we do live in a world where we pay taxes and that we do have the quote unquote social contract and, we pay taxes to kind of maintain the society that we have. And then if you allow a lot of immigrants to come here and profit off of that, then they're basically, you know, receiving benefits, from a system that they did not contribute towards. So for me, foreign policy is a bigger deal than immigration. I had Red Hawk on and he disagrees with that. But, right now, immigration is kind of a big thing. But once again, I think it's kind of a Band-Aid on a bullet hole. Do I think Trump's going to pull through on the migrant or on sealing the border? Probably not. I know that, a big campaign promise for him in 2016 was to build the wall. And obviously that didn't happen. He did start to build some of the wall, but then Biden came in and kind of said to hell with that. So do I think he's going to come through on it? No, but the base is really, really animated about this. And I think they're right to be animated about that. Carry out the largest deportation operation in American history. Do I think he's going to pull through on that? No. And do I think that this is going to be very feasible? I'm going to be honest. No. I don't think the left half of America is going to tolerate people going door to door to deport people. And I really don't see how you could really do this. And maybe people know better than I do, but would I be in favor of deportations? Yeah, probably. But at the same time, how is this going to be carried out? And as in usual Trump fashion, there is no explanation. He just says it. He says that he did it better than anybody else and nobody else was able to do it. So just trust the plan. Where we go one, we go all, right? And not that, you know, it's like a straight up QAnon thing, but you know what I'm saying. End inflation and make America affordable again. I really like this idea. Now, do I think that Trump will be able to do this? Absolutely not. He has laid out no plan to do that. And lest we not forget that Trump's final year in office was 2020, where he printed more than any president in history. He added $8 trillion to the deficit. We went from 20 to 28 trillion under Donald Trump. And then under Joe Biden, we went from 28 trillion to now 35 trillion. So will Trump fix inflation? No, he will not. Will he make America affordable again? That is actually a little bit of a different question, despite what people may think. If you bring enough deregulation, if you relieve, you know, bring sanctions off of countries that we get gas from, Venezuela and Russia, and you do, as he says, drill, baby, drill, then yeah, maybe you could actually make things a little bit more affordable. Do I think that's going to make a huge difference? If I'm being honest, no, I don't think it really will. The Keystone Pipeline thing, my understanding was that we actually got very, very minimal gas from that, like 1-2% of our overall gas volume from that. So I don't think that's going to be that big of a deal. But that being said, I know Trump is very, very pro-fracking, and I am pro-fracking as well, because there are enough technologies now to make sure that we can frack efficiently, safely, and make sure no drinking water is harmed. And even if there is a break in the pipes that we use to hydraulically fracture the earth, then they do make different fluid that goes at the top of the water, so that way it doesn't go down to the bottom of the water where everybody gets their drinking water from. So do I think Trump's going to make America affordable again? No. It sounds good, but I don't think that's really going to come through. Make America the dominant energy producer in the world by far. I like this campaign promise as well, to be completely honest with you. And I think that it is possible, because the Marcellus shale bed, as I was referring to a little bit earlier with the fracking, the Marcellus shale bed is a shale bed that goes over much of the northeastern part of the United States. If we were to begin fracking, and fracking a lot, then there is untold amounts of gasoline underneath our surface, and, you know, obviously oils and stuff like that, that we could sell to the rest of the world and that we could actually supply ourselves with. Do I think he's going to come through on that? If I'm being honest, I don't know. I hope he does. I think those are good jobs. I think that is something that we should do as a country, to create infrastructure, jobs, and also to export energy and make energy more affordable for ourselves. Will Trump come through on it? I don't know. I kind of hope he does. I'm hopeful. And honestly, I think J.D. Vance is a little bit more, is probably going to be behind the scenes driving policy a little bit more. And I'll talk about the PayPal mafia in this show a little bit and my thoughts on that after we get through the rest of this. Stop outsourcing and turn the United States into a manufacturing superpower. I like this as well. As you're going to see throughout the show, I am quite a fan of actually a decent bit of this platform. But the problem is the sincerity, and then also the fact that we had 4 years of Trump and none of this happened. So stop outsourcing and turn the United States into a manufacturing superpower. This would actually be something very, very good. We could do that, but that would require getting rid of tariffs, which I know a lot of the right-wing people like to say tariffs are a good thing, but I think tariffs are bad, and they are generally borne by the consumers. So if we would want to do that, we would have to cut lots and lots of regulations. Now, people bring up, and Trump brings up, how he reduced so many regulations. I don't know. I feel like a lot of that's probably overblown, but I don't know. I could probably look into it, but I feel like it's probably a little bit overblown. And if we did cut lots of regulation and bring more energy back home, then yeah, I think that would be a great thing. And if particularly we started making all of our chips, the Chips Act and all the, you know, mechanical chips we use for computers and everything like that, if we started making those here in Arizona, or Texas, or somewhere here in America, then I think that would greatly reduce our want to interfere in what is my personal biggest issue, is, China and Taiwan. As we know, and as I've talked about ad nauseum on the show and on Twitter, the big goal of the United States now is to eventually fight a hot war with China. If you look at the pivot to Asia in 2011, started under Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, they explicitly said that we are now going to shift our focus from terror wars over to great power competition with China, Russia, and Iran. So if we were to start making the U.S. a manufacturing powerhouse, then we could potentially reduce the likelihood for war and reduce our potential, you know, our want to defend Taiwan, which is just ridiculous in the first place and on its face. And Trump did say something that Taiwan should pay for their own defense. That does not mean that the U.S. will not commit to defending Taiwan, but he just believes that we should that they should pay for it. That is a departure from the Biden administration, where they said that we will defend Taiwan essentially no matter what, but it's still not a guarantee that we will not go fight a war over Taiwan, which is just absolutely insane. It's 8,000 miles away. We don't need to do that. Large tax cuts for workers and no tax on tips. I like this as well, but this also raises the question of, if you're reducing taxes, then you have to reduce spending so you do not create a larger deficit. Trump did this his first term, and he continued to spend more money. The problem with this is that you create lots of inflation when you reduce taxes and increase spending, because you are printing money out of thin air, putting it into circulation, and then taking less money in, so therefore you need to print more money to make up for the money that you're not taking in. The argument that they could
save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get a premium finish with less odor and fumes for your painting project with Rust-Oleum's low odor spray paint. It provides a long-lasting, durable finish, making it perfect for indoor or outdoor projects. Save big on Rust-Oleum spray paints now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big.
Put forth is that the reduction in taxes encourages people to work more because they're getting taxed less, and then they'll take in more money because people are working more. I don't see that logically follows to more income for the government. And if you ask me, the government shouldn't, you know, it's my opinion that we should have as minimal government as possible. But that being said, while we do live in this fucked up situation of a government and a global empire, it's probably best if we're not completely killing ourselves with inflation by, you know, running larger deficits. So I like large tax cuts and no tax on tips, which my understanding is tax or tips really aren't taxed that much anyways, because people generally don't collect on them. And now everybody's campaigning on this. I think that's good. But once again, what are you going to do to make up for it on the other end? That's kind of an important question, right? So continuing on. Defend our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, our fundamental freedoms, including freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and right to keep and bear arms. I like this plank as well. Will Trump follow through on it? No. He already didn't follow through on it because there are anti-BDS laws that Trump signed into law in 2019. And then he also signed the bump stock ban and was, you know, pretty big on appointing terrible people to the NRA and then people who would essentially do more to restrict the Second Amendment. If Trump pulls through on this, I think that's a good thing. Do I think he will do it? No. Freedom of religion. Okay. Yeah, we pretty much have that. There's nobody really being discriminated against for their religion. But freedom of speech. Yeah, we really don't have freedom of speech because in 38 different states, as I pointed out in all these shows all the time, we have anti-BDS laws in 38 states. And unless he's willing to remove those, then we are not defending free speech, because we should be able to criticize any government, any country, any person, any race, any creed, anything, anytime, anywhere, without having to pay legal consequences, unlike the government workers who have to sign a pledge that they will not criticize Israel. Continuing on, prevent World War III, restore peace in Europe and in the Middle East, build a great Iron Dome missile defense shield over our entire country, all made in America. Once again, I like this plank. But the problem is that Trump laid a lot of the groundwork down to start the war in Ukraine by tearing up anti-ballistic missile treaties, sending deadly anti-tank missiles into Ukraine, and then sanctioning Russia, and then, you know, approving the aid package to Ukraine more recently after he said that he wanted to end the war, that he would end the war on day one, which is just absolutely ridiculous. I really don't think Trump will do that. And then on top of that, when he talks about the Middle East, hello, the Abraham Accords were part of the reason why the Palestinians decided to launch the war into Israel and kill 1,200 people. And Israel decided to kill part of that 1,200 as well. Nobody really knows how many people were killed by Israel versus Hamas, but it is clear that both Israel and Hamas had killed innocent Israeli civilians, and that's absolutely terrible. So Do I think Trump will follow through on restoring peace in Europe and the Middle East? No, because there was no peace in the Middle East under Trump. As much as people want to say there were no wars, there were no new wars. Yes, that's correct. We flirted with a lot of them, but there was not peace in the Middle East. You know, the genocide in Yemen was still going on. The war in Libya, Afghanistan, Iraq, Somalia, Syria, all these wars were continuing under Trump's presidency. And, you know, we, once again, we laid down the groundwork to fight a war or to basically start this war in Ukraine. And Trump still hasn't really, put out any signals that he doesn't, that he wants to roll back the entire, you know, pivot to Asia. So, I don't really see Trump as wanting to stop World War III. It sounds good on the campaign, but it's going to matter when he gets in there. So I like that plank. Do I think he's going to pull through on it? No. Build a great Iron Dome defense shield over our entire country. This just is ridiculous on its face. Israel has an Iron Dome, and that seems to do well for them. But I mean, like, nobody is trying to fuck with America. Let's be honest here. Nobody's going to, and I know Republicans like to say that there's going to be Chinese off the coast of California. That's ridiculous. You guys are morons for even thinking that. But to build an Iron Dome over America, we have two oceans on each side of us. And then to our north and south, we generally have countries, at least Canada kind of likes us. Mexico's probably like 50-50 on us, but now they have this person who's more closely aligned with the West down in Mexico. So I really don't see the purpose of building an Iron Dome over America, because we're fine. We're not in any kind of, you know, real threat of any military invasion or bombs or anything like that coming over the borders. I think it's kind of silly to even say that we should do that. I mean, can you imagine how much money that's going to cost to build an Iron Dome, funded by the government, paying government workers to do that? And the weaponization of government against the American people. Once again, we had 4 years of Trump to do this, and that never happened. It's still going on to this day. Trump just doesn't like that it's happening to him. But, you know, there's still people being swatted every day. You know, unfair police shootings, just so much going on wrong in this country today. And, you know, do I like this plank? Yeah. But once again, where are we going to get follow through on any of this? Stop the migrant crime epidemic, demolish the foreign drug cartels, crush gang violence, and lock up violent offenders. Once again, this goes back to the earlier plank of we need to fix our foreign policy in order to quit incentivizing people to come here and end the drug war, so that way people stop, you know, illegally smuggling drugs over the border, and also, you know, really legalizing drugs, and then, you know, basically removing the incentives for people to trade them illegally would go a long ways in reducing the migrant crime epidemic and then foreign drug cartels and all this stuff. Yeah, I mean, I'd be all for doing this kind of stuff. I like the Bukele approach of, you know, basically cracking down on violent crime to make your country a better place, which is exactly what Bukele did. But I just don't know that Trump is that kind of guy who's going to do this kind of stuff. He doesn't really have the balls to do it. Number 11, rebuild our cities, including Washington, D.C., making them safe, clean, and beautiful again. The homeless epidemic, yes, it's bad. I mean, even now when I start to go to Pittsburgh, there's more homeless people than there was before. I really don't know what you could really do about this other than basically, you know, I hate to say it, but put a police presence in a lot of these cities and then clean up the bums. If you see bums bumming out, you know, shitting in the streets, sorry, you can't be here anymore. You got to go somewhere. You can't stay here. Put them in jail, something. I don't know. But, you know, people talk about how they could deregulate the housing market and, you know, the ability to build houses and stuff like that. Yeah, maybe. But, you know, I think abolishing the minimum wage might be a good start to that as well. I know this, like, a lot of this stuff isn't realistic, but I mean, if we're talking about solutions here, if you basically allow people to work for lower than the minimum wage or allow them to negotiate on their own behalf and determine what wage they deem acceptable, then people will be more likely to get jobs. I really don't know how you fix the homeless epidemic, because I feel like there's more than just one cause. And rebuilding our cities, yeah, I mean, they're there, but they're kind of shitholes. Anyways, strengthen and modernize our military, making it without question the strongest and most powerful in the world. I mean, I really don't think we're rivaled next to anybody. China has some stuff that looks nice, but ultimately they're not any kind of military threat to us. So, I mean, what are we worried about there? I mean, we're fine. And clearly over the last 20, 30 years, we've displayed all over the world that we are quite the most powerful military. So, yeah, I don't know what else we could do to modernize our military, but I know the big talking point on the Republican side is to de-wokeify our military. Sure, let's do it. But, like, I don't know what else you're really expecting. If anything, you know, let's withdraw our troops from all over the world and then, you know, protect our home here, have them work or have them just protect our borders. Like, what the hell's wrong with any of that? Keep number 13, keep the US dollar as the world's reserve currency. Well, right now, as we know, all of the wars and stuff like that are doing a lot to move us off of that position. Our support for Israel, our support for Ukraine, our support for Taiwan, and our, you know, sanctioning the entire world has really done a lot to diminish our standing in the world. So if you'd want to maintain the US dollar as a world's reserve currency, then I would suggest maybe, as much as people may not like this, but the China model. Instead of going into countries with bombs, you go in there with a briefcase. Do I think Trump is going to be able to do this? I think he would be more likely to do it than Kamala Harris. Let's leave it at that. I don't know. Once again, hard to predict the future, but that's kind of where we're at. 14, fight for and protect Social Security and Medicare with no cuts, including no changes to the retirement age. This is a problem. I do not like this plank, which might be one of the first ones that I explicitly do not like, because Social Security is essentially robbing from the poor and giving to the rich and the more well off. You guys can let me know in the comments, and if you're listening, not live, whatever you're doing, let me know how many older people you know that are poor versus, you know, average, let's say, people who are 20 to 35. Who do you think is more well off amongst that group? People towards their retirement, the boomers, the late Gen Xers, or do you think the people in the 20 to 35 range are more well off? And should we take money from the people in the 20 to 45 range and give it to people who are retiring? If you ask me for my opinion, and I'm going to give it because it's my podcast, I don't think we should be giving money from the lower middle class, giving it to the upper middle class. It's literally a wealth transfer from the, you know, from the lower middle class to the upper middle class and sometimes even the upper classes. And this isn't about like some kind of class war or anything like that. It's about the fact that you're taking from people who are working and trying to save up and try to develop a lives for themselves and have families. And you're giving it to people who already prospered and saw, you know, a much better economy than the people my age are left with. So I think Trump will actually follow through on that. It's not much to really follow up on, but let's be honest, this is kind of like an Obama plank. As much as people want to say that he's so different than the Democrats, I mean, this was where Democrats were 10, 15, 20 years ago. So yeah, 15, cancel the electric vehicle mandate and cut costly, burdensome regulations. I like this plank. I do. People have probably heard me talk quite a bit about electric vehicles. I am a fan of electric vehicles, but I'm not a fan of the government requiring people buy or make electric vehicles because there's not the infrastructure for it and the demand isn't there. I mean, at my dealership, we really don't sell that many electric vehicles. We have a ton of Lyrics, a couple Hummers on the lot. I love them. I do. They're great to drive. They drive nice. As far as I know, the Lyrics, we've had some issues with them, but generally once we kind of get them in and then get everything situated, they're generally good. The Hummers, we have not seen any issues with those. Granted, we haven't sold that many. And there's not many out there on the road, but I am a big fan of EVs. But, you know, I agree with Trump here that, you know, canceling the mandate is a good thing. And then getting rid of costly and burdensome regulations, I'm all for it. Do I think he'll follow through on this? Maybe. I'm actually kind of optimistic about this. I hope he does. And we'll just kind of have to see what happens. Yeah, older Gen Xers. Once you get to millennials, the wealth gap really starts to show up. And yeah, I've kind of talked about this quite a bit where a lot of Gen Xers and boomers got to kind of grow up with this, I don't want to say industrial revolution, but like as the US is really rising in standard from, you know, the 50s, 60s, all the way up to like the 90s. And that's when things started to kind of taper off, so to speak. So 16, cut federal funding for any school pushing critical race theory, radical gender ideology, and other inappropriate racial, sexual, or political content on our children. I like this plank. I think that's good. As everybody knows, I'm a little bit more culturally right-leaning. So I am for getting rid of this kind of stuff because I don't think children should be learning sexually explicit content. I think that's between parents and their children is to decide when they're ready to be exposed to that kind of stuff. I'm not a parent, so, and I'm not any kind of therapist. You do what you want with your kids. You decide when your kids learn this kind of stuff. It's not my business to tell parents what to do when it comes to stuff like this. Now this is kind of where I moved away from my anarchist position, but I do think that, the state should intervene when it comes to people harming children. If there are people who are trying to transform their children and you guys know exactly what I'm talking about, then I think the government does have the right to go in there and stop the parents from doing that because I believe that is child genital mutilation. I believe that is child abuse. And I think that if we're going to have a government, then it should absolutely serve to protect children, the most innocent of us all. So yeah, I'm good with cutting federal funding from schools, pushing that kind of stuff, but why stop there? Let's get rid of the Department of Education, which Trump has said that he would do, and I do not believe he'll follow up on that because he had 4 years to do it and didn't do anything for it. Keep men out of women's sports. I mean, that's pretty simple. I'm for that. There shouldn't be men and women's sports. I did a whole podcast on it. I think it was called Trans Sports. I couldn't tell you what exact episode it was, but it was a pretty short one. I talked about the Leah Thomas situation where the transformed individual had, you know, came out as a record swimmer. And yeah, so yeah, I'm good with that. That's pretty straightforward. I don't know how you really follow up on that, but deport pro-Hamas radicals and make our college campuses safe and patriotic again. So this right here is going to be a little bit of a tricky one and could have some very ugly implications. Let's talk about it. Who are pro-Hamas radicals? I'm called pro-Hamas because I say we shouldn't fund Israel. Thomas Massie, I'm pretty sure, has been called pro-Hamas. People who say that Israel is completely wrong in what they're doing to the Palestinians, they've been called pro-Hamas. So you're going to deport us? Where are we going to go? I'm an American citizen. I just don't want our, you know, taxpayer dollars going to Israel. That could lead to unintended consequences long-term. It's a bad streak of positive rights. Yeah, and my unpopular libertarian position, and maybe it's not a libertarian position, I'm okay with that, but that children do have positive rights because children did not consent to being born, and it was upon two other people who did an action that birthed a child, and I believe that you as a parent do have positive rights to that child because that child did not consent to being born. It was the responsibility of you and one other person that spawned that child, so therefore you should take care of that child because it is because of you that the child is here. Some people may disagree with that position, but I think it's absolutely right that you know, we should take care of children because they can't take care of themselves. So do I think he's going to follow up on deporting pro-Hamas radicals and making our college campuses safe and patriotic again? He could. There are a lot of laws on the books. I know Ron DeSantis is big on this. But, you know, and once again, in 38 states in the country, it is illegal to criticize Israel in some situations. And I think in South Dakota, they did make it illegal to criticize Israel in some certain respects. I mean, the law that Kristi Noem signed is absolutely insane. So I give this platform or this part of the platform an absolute thumbs down. I don't like it. Number 19, secure our elections, including same-day voting, voter identification, paper ballots, and proof of citizenship. Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think people who weren't born here and don't live here should be voting in our elections. I think that's pretty straightforward. Unite our country, which is number 20. Do I think he's going to follow through on this? No, because actually in 2020, when Trump had claimed that he lost the election, that the election was stolen from him, he didn't do anything to really combat that. Do I think he's going to do it again? Probably. He's probably not going to do anything about it. And if he loses, he's going to cry stolen. And yeah, so do I believe that the 2020 election was stolen? No, I don't. I do believe that it was rigged, quote unquote, as in the media apparatus had ran against him and withheld information about Joe Biden that could make him look very, very unfavorable. So social media was basically set up to run against Trump and then win Joe Biden the election. Does that mean it was stolen from him? You could definitely make that argument, but do I believe that there was voter fraud within the margin to swing the election? No, and I've been convinced of that. And even the people that Trump hired said that there was no evidence of that. Sidney Powell, the Kraken, said she knew that all of the election fraud lawsuits were bullshit. Trump raised like $280 million for the lawsuits and had only spent about $40 or $50 million on the lawsuits. So what happened with the rest of that money? I don't know, but there's some ugly implications. Sam and I debated this on Five Till Midnight a couple weeks ago. Feel free to go subscribe and check that out. So now number 20, Unite Our Country by Bringing It to New Level or New and Record Levels of Success. If you ask Trump, we had the greatest economy in the world when he was president. I'll remove this here so you guys can look at my beautiful face. But if you ask Trump, he had the greatest economy in the world and the greatest economy that the U.S. had ever seen, even though that's kind of verifiably false. But, you know, do I think that's a good idea? Sure. I don't know how he plans to do that short of, you know, unleashing the free market and abolishing, you know, a lot of agencies and regulations and stuff like that. I don't know. When it comes to the PayPal mafia, and this kind of, we'll close out on this, but the PayPal mafia, this whole situation was brought light to me by a lot of my good friends, you know, Pete Quinones and Phil, who was on the show, Phil Gibson, where we kind of talked about this. And basically, it's the idea that a lot of big tech bros are basically backing Trump under the guise that we're putting him into power so he can cut up the administrative state that makes all these regulations that makes it difficult to operate business. Now, do I like this idea? Yes. Do I think this is better than the status quo? Yes. Do I think that there is potential here? Yes. But do I think they're going to be able to persuade Trump and then he's going to follow through with it if he gets elected? That's a much tougher question. That is a very, very, very loaded question because as we saw in his first administration, anytime he got overruled or somebody said that they want him to do something else, generally he just said, okay, whatever, let's do it. You know, hey, we got to withdraw from Syria. We're, you know, Assad gassed his own people, right? And then what did he do? He dropped bombs on Syria. Pretty much every single time Trump had went to do the right thing, he got pushed just a little bit, not even like hard. He got pushed a little bit and then he just turned around and endorsed the what the swamp wanted him to do. So that being said, when I hear people talk about the PayPal mafia, I understand why there's excitement. I understand why people are optimistic about it. But the chance of Trump following through on a lot of this stuff just seems absolutely ridiculous to me. I think there's a very, very small chance that he's going to do this kind of stuff. And they're talking about, you know, more of like mercantilism where, you know, we're going to be a lot more hawkish on like trade with China, which Trump already was. And then Biden ramped up. I don't think that stuff's any good, but, the main focus is kind of eliminating the agencies that make it tough to operate big business. Mark Andreessen, Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy, Peter Thiel, David Sachs are these kind of guys that come up when people talk about the PayPal mafia and some of the people who are backing Trump now. Once again, do I think these people are going to be able to successfully move Trump? If I'm being honest, no. I think they're donating to Trump because they see the writing on the wall and they realize that a Kamala Harris administration is going to be a lot tougher on them. And they think that Trump's a little bit of a better option. So they're going to do everything they can to get Trump in the White House. I was listening to a podcast, so I think it's Mark Andreessen and Ben Horowitz. If I have those mistaken, I apologize if I say their names wrong, whatever. But basically, they're saying that if China gets a hold of AI, then it's going to change the direction of the future of the world. Do I think that's a little hyperbolic? Yeah, I don't think it's going to be quite like that. But I understand where they're coming from. But let's be honest here. If you look at the last 20 years, how can you say that the West and the United States are really a safe steward of the world? I mean, we really haven't been. I mean, with how many people we've killed in all these wars and then what we've done to all these countries, how can you make the argument that we're the good guys? I don't think you can. It actually sort of sounds like another form of corporatism from the sound of it. I don't know much about it, but I smell soft fascism. Yeah, I think that's appropriate. And the other thing that kind of concerns me, and this is kind of where my tinfoil hat goes on and where a lot of the right-leaning guys, I feel like they get led astray, where a lot of the Trump administration and the people who are underneath Trump are very, very big Zionists. And Peter Thiel kind of wants this whole pre-crime society with Palantir where you could spy on everybody at any time for any reason. That kind of stuff concerns me, and it does make me ask some questions like, okay, well, what the hell's going on? And is this going to play a heavy hand in the next Trump administration? And does that mean that we're going to have a greater spying apparatus that starts to monitor your social media for if you dissent against Israel or even the, you know, the coming Cold War with China, or not the coming Cold War, but the hot war with China? I don't know, man, but that's kind of ugly. And that's why I won't vote for Trump. I'm not going to vote for Kamala, obviously, but I'm sitting this one out. I don't like Chase Oliver either. So I mean, it's kind of like a damned if you do, damned if you don't. So what do you do? I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to be right here in this house doing nothing. I'm going to upload a selfie on November 8th, the day of the election, which is 2 days after my 30th birthday. I'm going to sit right here, and I'm going to put a selfie up, and I'm going to say, I didn't vote. That's that. So those are my thoughts on Agenda 47, Trump's Agenda 47, that is. My thoughts on the coming Trump administration, if it is to be that. I'm a pretty pessimistic guy when it comes to the future of our politics right now. But I don't know, man. We'll see. So hopefully you guys enjoyed this. Make sure you head over to acommoncrown.com to check out our music and all that stuff. Subscribe, like, share, all that good stuff. I'm trying to get 1,000 subscribers. I'm getting close. So guys, please, 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 please subscribe. Hit all the links below to figure out what I got going on. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. And until next time, take care.